sense. I was like, when did that happen?
While you were gone.
Predicting anything about the future, but we're just kind of looking at taking a snapshot today, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is, in his case, at three, most of the testing is stuff that can have been trained, so it's not a really good estimate of exactly how his abstract thinking is going to be, okay? We just can't test that in a three-year-old. Mm-hmm. So just know that good or this could be better, it could be worse. These scores are just say who he is right now. His scores came out all in the 80s. Verbal IQ 88, performance IQ 82, full scale IQ 83. 80s, the 80s are in the low average range. Between 80 and 90 is low average. So that's grossly within normal limits.
How is he at 88 and he can't speak? That was his highest one.
because all we had to do was point on this.
Well,
Remember what I just said to you?
Right.
I understand.
I just
trained information.
Okay. Yes.
And this shows his kind of verbal understanding.
That's it.
And I think you all commented that he understands a lot more than he can say.
Yeah, no.
Okay?
You can't. No, and I just want to clarify that.
So absolutely, you're absolutely right that the fact that he can't talk is a problem. But he has a lot of, remember how he did a lot of, though, he even pointed at things to show me what they were.
Course.
And
yeah.
That was that, at his level, his age, still counts.
Okay.
So when he pointed at the pen to tell me what do people write
sure.
with.
Sure.
And I remember I made the comment, I never see kids do that.
Right.
Yeah. So, can I grab that piece of paper over there?
Yeah,
this
marker.
Piece of paper, but... Thank you.
Okay, that makes sense.
Like I said, you're going to get a copy of this, so... Just
I just wanted to take some notes, and I
forgot my paper. I forgot my paper. Sometimes helps keep focused, too.
Is it, well, I was wondering if there was a specific text that you used, or is it just...
I used the last one.
Okay.
And that's all listed in here, so... And it's an IQ test. It's,
mm-hmm.
Like I said, it's standardized, but it's not. I mean, for a 3-year-old, we would just consider it information. We wouldn't consider it predictive.
That's actually good information, even though it could go bad.
And goodness,
I then had that test for the gifted program, so I have all the information about it at home.
Cool.
I can show you how it works.
But it's good information.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
But it's for a 3-year-old, so it's not the same as when you're testing a 7-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So I just really want to make sure that that's clear, because I just know these scores can change for a lot of different reasons.
Right.
And sometimes little tiny kids can do really well. I mean, he's had a lot of intervention, and you guys have worked really hard with him.
Mm-hmm.
So he has good trained rote memory information, which is what we test at this age.
Right.
But the trick will be, how does he do with abstraction when he gets older?
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be, the piece that's still going to be out there waiting for us, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Right now, given all the issues he's had, he's moving along quite well
mm-hmm.
in this, and so that's very encouraging. In his adaptive skills. These are things that we talked about with that Vineland. He came out with his daily living skills also in the low average range, so kind of comparable.
Mm-hmm.
Now, his communication skills is where it shows up,
mm-hmm.
is in the impaired range. And that's where the expressive really shows up
mm-hmm.
as a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And also he's kind of busy,
mm-hmm.
as we talked about.
Yeah.
He's a very busy guy.
Yeah.
And so he's very impulsive. His socialization came out at a 75, which is in the borderline range. And of course, socialization is affected by not being able to talk.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he's a really social little guy.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to be social.
Mm-hmm.
Two things affect his socialization. One is the lack of language, which is going to really limit his ability to socialize with other children
mm-hmm.
because he can't talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows that. And that makes it harder for him. The second thing is that he's a very busy child.
Mm-hmm.
And so he doesn't like and spend a lot of time developing play schemes and developing interactions with others because of his busyness.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the, and from a diagnostic perspective, which is what I do all this for, is to look at the diagnosis, what I see is a child who is delayed, is developing like a younger child, but is still within, grossly within the normal limits, not as completely impaired, not in the range of mental retardation, which is really encouraging given chromosomal differences. We always worry about those things,
mm-hmm.
and so right this time we don't see that, which is very encouraging. I do see a child with significant impulse control problems, and that's the diagnosis that I gave him, impulse control disorder.
Mm-hmm.
Impulse control disorder just means that you're very impulsive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it doesn't have any other big meanings than that. It is often a diagnosis given in a younger child who eventually will have an ADHD diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
I don't give ADHD treatment. Some people do, but I have found that children change a lot between the age of two and five, mm-hmm. So three-year-olds are still changing a great deal, and what seems very evident in a three-year-old may not look the same in a five-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
So my feeling is we need to still see how he develops to make that determination. But often children that present as he does right now end up with an ADHD diagnosis. With that very busy body, and you have to kind of keep redirecting his attention.
Mm-hmm.
And as you were giving me a little hints on how to keep his hands still,
sure.
And you've done a wonderful job of using ABA to help him really have instructional control,
mm-hmm.
And he has wonderful instructional control. So in other words, with lots of prompting,
mm-hmm.
He can focus and do what you need him to do.
Right.
But he doesn't do it on his own. I mean, that he needs all that prompting to do it, and that's very typical of kids with ADHD. So my guess is that's the direction you're going,
mm-hmm.
But I think we need to wait and see from a perspective of we don't give stimulants, or at least we in this clinic don't give stimulants to three-year-olds, and we don't treat them for ADHD at this age. So we would consider something to slow them down in a different realm of medication to kind of slow those impulses down if it was at an impairing point. If he felt like, gosh, he just isn't learning because he's so busy,
mm-hmm.
He can't, he can't kind of progress.
Right.
Then we think about doing something, and Dr. Daniel will talk a little bit about that. We think about doing something more in a range that would just kind of down-regulate his body and help him be able to have a little more togetherness. But gosh, he's a great little guy. He does not look autistic. That was a question that was on the first paperwork. And he doesn't look like a child with autism. So he's real social, he's real aware, he's real manipulative.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all good things. Manipulative is a good thing because it's a socially aware behavior and fairly typical of young children. I would recommend that you keep working towards more independence. And we talked a little bit about this. I think mommy made a comment that he likes to be held all the time. And we really want to move away from that as much as possible because he doesn't need to be held all the time. And again, that's kind of typical of ADHD kids. They really like a lot of attention. They're very attention seeking, which is another thing that makes them not look autistic because they're all about the attention, all about people being involved in his life all the time. But he needs to learn to play on his own, to self-soothe, and so just keep working towards those things. Things like using timers, you need to play so much before you come back and ask me. And you just keep working on it, reinforcing independent play and not reinforcing, constant getting attention. And that part, with a child who's been fragile, who's had a lot of differences and who you've had to work hard with, it's hard to kind of switch gears and think about, okay, how do I encourage the opposite now? And so just keep working on that. And you and I talked a little bit about that, Deb, because it sounds like you're doing some of those things. And we didn't talk as much about that, but definitely things like, and even the thing of eventually getting him into his own bed, all of those kinds of things, getting him so he can be more independent. It's just a goal. It's mm-hmm. It's not an emergency. It's not a terrible thing. It's mm-hmm. just one of those things that you keep working on. So that was the one thing I commented on because it is, it's going to benefit him in the long run. It also helps him feel more confident. The more he can do for himself, the more he can take care of himself, and the more he can soothe, and that's, sometimes you don't get your way, and that's okay. You have tantrums, it's not a big deal. Nobody dies from tantrums. So, there will be probably some tantrums in his future.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
About not getting, you know, not being held, not getting things immediately, but that is sort of the challenge of a very impulsive child, that they want everything immediately, they want it, they're very impatient, and so trying to grow some of that patience, delay of gratification, et cetera, is just always the goal that our challenge, that's going to be the realm of challenge for him, I think. I know you guys are up to it, so I'm not really too worried about it. So,
yeah.
Because you've done such an excellent job.
Can I ask a question?
Absolutely.
You said that his, you said that the only diagnosis was the impulse control
mm-hmm.
disorder.
Right.
But I was wondering if there was, the language.
Okay, we need to add that to you know exactly what you were going to do. So.
And then this is, well, it's quite receptive, expressive.
Okay.
It's the young part for a past year.
Okay. That's the piece I didn't know. That's why I didn't have it. Yeah, mixed it better and receptive.
Okay. Because, yeah.
He does have some language. Definite
language. I didn't do the typical formal test because it sounded like First Step just recently did it, and you know, we don't want to give a test that closely together,
mm-hmm.
but I did want to get a better understanding myself of where his, at least his receptive language is.
Yeah.
Clearly his expressive language is delayed. I think a lot of that is secondary to the severe articulation problems he's having. But for the receptive language, I did it based on parent report, and Dad helped out mostly, but then we kind of added in with what you were saying, Mom. And the sensing, kind of like the 29-month level for receptive language. And a lot of things still, even though it was at the 29-month level, there are some things she didn't get credit for, but like we were thinking it's emerging, but not quite there, and still something he needed to work on. So he's still showing some skills, but even though he didn't get credit for those things, at least it's emerging. On some of them, but overall it was around the 29-month level. So a little bit lower on that receptive side too. And I think school is working on receptive language a little bit. They're working on labels and getting that vocabulary going, which is good. And I think their other goals were pretty good too in terms of trying to work on that articulation. And it sounds like they're using the program here for dyspraxia. And they talked to you about apraxia?
Mm-hmm.
So, a lot of times we don't give the diagnosis for apraxia by step 3 because it's still just a little too young for that, but I definitely think those programs are appropriate for him to kind of work on because he does have so much trouble, even with some things in isolation. He does pretty well. I know he can see some consonants in isolation by himself, but the vowels, even he was having trouble saying the vowels on their own.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to start putting a lot of focus on the vowels because those are kind of the core of the word. And like I was telling Dad last week, a lot of times, you know, in context, even if he was saying apple, if there was a cracker, we'd kind of know he's talking about cracker. Cookie, just a cookie.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe these are contextual cues to do it, but it's still a little more.
We've been working on vowels for about a year.
Yeah.
Every
day. The thing with apraxia is it's very time-consuming. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it takes a long time even just to get one little step.
Yeah.
So just to let you know to keep on it, and I know it's frustrating because like, is he ever going to get it? But it's with the constant practice, and you're just kind of having to retrain the brain a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It's because they consider it a neurological disorder, but I think sometimes that sounds scary to parents to hear neurological. And it's just a matter of he's having trouble planning, making that plan of sequencing sounds
mm-hmm.
together. So he might be able to make some sounds in isolation, but then, like, even when he gets all the sounds in isolation, when he can do all the vowel sounds, all the consonant sounds, to then put them together and make a consonant vowel sequence may still be hard.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that constant training that brain to plan. And so there's no real magical trick to it. It's just repetition.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we have Hoffman Parsons.
Mm-hmm. Seems like, and we saw that the other day, he was watching the Teletubbies and they said bye-bye and he said bye-bye
mm-hmm.
and it was like he wasn't really trying, it was just
mm-hmm.
kind of...
You see that a lot with apraxia. Things
came
that
out.
When it's not, when they're not thinking about it, it just kind of comes out when they're not having to plan it.
Yeah.
It's just, a lot of times you might hear him say a word once, and then you try to get him to say it again, and he never says it again.
Well, that's what happened. He was kind of saying it, but it didn't sound the same way.
Yeah.
Because it was just so relaxed.
So what's the, at what age would that label be applied, or the reluctance to apply
it? Do it. Or, and some, I mean, I could give it now, and maybe I'll go ahead and put it on there, because I think it'll fit them appropriately enough. But, and sometimes, there's all the baby but I go based on more what training approaches are appropriate.
Right.
And I don't go hang so much on the label of it.
Right.
And he might fit this diagnosis.
Right.
And fit kind of the characteristics of apraxia now, but
right.
then could take a shift to look at more of what we call
right.
phonological.
Well, I
mean, it's
nice to know so that you can do, you know, more research and get more information, but
mm-hmm.
if you, like right now we don't have a speech therapist coming to the house,
mm-hmm.
and if you tell your insurance company that they have autism or even are on the spectrum, then they won't pay.
But
anything.
He doesn't
so,
have
I know,
so.
But that's
right.
so if we, you know,
sometimes
you can say
apraxia,
that,
sometimes
yeah.
sometimes it's apraxia either.
Yeah.
But, well, I think I coded him with the code that usually... Just for apraxia,
okay. 4.5.
But when I can put that on there, I don't know if it'll help with insurance.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just, well, I mean, that's the thing. It doesn't,
it depends on your insurance company.
Yeah.
It completely depends
yeah.
on your insurance company. Some, they just, they cut out different things.
I know.
Each plant.
Right.
So it's not even the company,
yeah.
it's the plant.
They didn't sound like there was going to be, after the pre-certification and we
yeah.
did an evaluation, if there's a need, which there obviously is a need
yeah.
because he's not speaking at 3,
sure.
then...
Absolutely.
Then
so that was my other question, which I didn't know if you could answer, is if we should, like, if we should continue doing speech therapy at home in addition to the therapy that he's doing at school.
Well, do you feel like you're getting things to work on at home from school?
We get the stories yeah. and stuff.
I mean,
yeah.
we don't actually need the school to send us stuff to work on. I mean, we know it too, but, like,
mm-hmm.
we're still not speech therapists,
right.
you know?
Right.
So
right.
I'm wondering
right.
if you mean
right.
that, and, like, our old speech therapist
mm-hmm.
really, like, I don't think she did a lot for Miles, but she did a lot for us. Like, she
uh-huh.
sort of trained us, because
mm-hmm.
that was through first steps, so they really focus on teaching the parents how to
mm-hmm.
work with the child. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, I'm just
saying. I think to have it at home is kind of based on your comfort level, too. And at this stage, I mean, it wouldn't probably hurt him to have some supplementary, since it is, I mean, he's had a lot, though, so far.
Yeah.
And, I mean, just the knowing it's going to take time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you wanted to, you know.
Because you need that help.
Yeah.
Right. And if you're saying, you know, the speech therapist at school can also help
right.
you, so it's a matter of, do you want, I mean, you
yeah.
said it perfectly, do you want
right.
extra support in helping him? Because it's not necessarily going to make it move any faster,
right.
but if
well,
it helps
Well, that was my
you
question.
All.
If it doesn't really matter if we do, like, 20 hours of therapy extra a week, it's still going to take
yeah,
a lot of time.
Yeah, everything that, because you're going to have to be picking up a lot, and because it is a repetition. It's
right.
not so much the length of it, it's how
right.
frequently he's practicing, and it sounds like you guys are probably pretty good at giving him that practice, and then if you want to pay someone to help
right.
you in that practice,
right.
or do you feel confident
okay.
and comfortable with what school's giving you, that you're on the same track as them? Because I would be very consistent. I mean, you don't want to be working on constant vowel, and they're still on working on vowel.
Right.
I mean,
right.
Very
so that when you say, and obviously you can't say like time, but in your experience,
mm-hmm.
like when do children with this level of impaired language speak? I know you can't say
it
at all, but like
it does. And sometimes I think with him, we're getting. I mean, he hasn't worked on for a year, but now we're also getting maturity on our side,
mm-hmm.
which helps. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it's usually around 3 to 4. You start to see a bigger pickup and things, because I've worked
mm-hmm.
with kids before and trying to imitate vowels at age 2, and it's like, oh my gosh. And then all of a sudden,
mm-hmm.
they're 3, 3.5, you're getting that maturity on your side,
mm-hmm.
and then you're starting to want a little bit more, wanting to keep getting more frustrated,
mm-hmm.
and all that kind of working in your favor, and then that kind of helps a little bit. So I would expect within the next year or so, you start seeing some more progress.
The one thing, this goes along with this though, is this attention
mm-hmm.
impulse control issue is a kind of another barrier in
mm-hmm.
his life.
Right.
Because people who have impulse control attention issues have trouble processing. so they don't process as quickly and they don't retain and be able to, and they can't call things. So in other words, you might know it one time, might not know another time, but they'll access that information in a very inconsistent manner. So that may be another little factor that is kind of playing into this.
Plus, it's so hard for him when he is impulsive. I mean, it's going to take him. He's going to have to think about it for a while. It doesn't come just naturally to him. And when you're impulsive, like, you just want to go for it and not.
So the frustration. I mean, all those things play together. So patience on everybody's part. It's going to take time. The good news is that it gets a little bit older, and you still see these things. You can try a stimulant. You can do some things to try to help that brain work a little bit better.
Right.
When's the older, like five, when you say older, or do you mean like
But then other than that, and I know school's working on oral motor, which is good. I mean, because I did see some of his grueling, and I think he just needs to kind of be more aware of his stressors. That always helps in terms of articulation. And, you know, even at night when you guys are brushing teeth, to kind of, you know, that's always a good time to maybe work on stimulating some of that in there. And if you're working on the receptive language, following directions, all that sort of thing. And I did put the name of another program for Praxia that's Easy Does It for Praxia. I don't know if they're doing it. Are they doing like CNCs? Did I ask you that last week? Like
they're not.
No.
We just.
Didn't.
Well, we were going to do the hemotype at one point, and it was way too complicated with his sign. It was confusing him.
Okay.
So we just stopped.
Okay.
But, I mean, that has been a while.
Okay. And even if it's not the hemotype, sometimes that helps because it gives another visual of the sound. And that usually does, it has little activities to work on that provide some visuals. So you can start painting, or they name the sound, so like, K, I think, is like a dinosaur sound, or M is a blender sound. So they're assigning other little cues, and sometimes, like, if I'm working on K, I'll have a picture of a dinosaur on the table, so we're focusing on hearing that sound and working on that sound. So he's not having to rely only on what he's hearing. He has that visual to kind of make it more concrete. So sounds aren't very concrete. So kind of that might help a little bit, too, with him being able to piece them together. And sometimes, you know, and once he starts to understand what a recognition even better, then you can have that visual too, and like K with the E and T. So I do want to start giving maybe as much input and cueing as we can, and that might kind of help pick things up a little bit too. And keep working on sign, encourage the sign for requesting, because he needs a way to communicate while he's working on the verbal. He seems to be picking up on signs, he seems to be accepting of it. So I keep encouraging new signs, and I know it's tough, but.
I love teaching new signs.
Do you feel like other resources to know what the signs are for everything? We have a book.
We have a book that I really like.
It's a cool website that actually you can see people doing it. On the thing. So sometimes that's a nice little addition because I like it. I like to see the actual movement that.
We'll
check that out. We did the whole YouTube thing with somebody, if you can see it, we can reinforce it. He doesn't have a lot of control over his hands, so he can't do anything. He has some dangerous signs too. He beats his head when he does horse, so some signs are just way too much, and he doesn't have any control, but he loves horses, so
The medical card is really easy because he's a great kid. He really hasn't had any big risk factors in his life. Born okay and not really any concern about his overall health. You did mention that he sent the whole thing to his post. You're a little concerned about his vision. So I'm going to recommend that you take him to see a pediatric ophthalmologist and just at the one-time visit, have him dilate his eyes, get a look. Because I can't tell you, and he does have two eyes. If one isn't working very well, he can still see perfectly fine with one eye. And you just need to know everything you can about him. He doesn't have anything else happening to him. So I just do it one time and be down and you know what his vision is like and what his eye structure is like. Okay?
Does that make sense? Do you have a suggestion? Do you know anyone?
Any pediatric ophthalmologist.
Anyone. You didn't have one specifically.
No, I don't have any particular one.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of them up and down the street that we're on. There's a lot of them at Children's Mercy, but there are good ones in all cities. Just so it's a pediatric ophthalmologist. I wouldn't go to an adult ophthalmologist. They're just not used to doing for little kids. They don't cooperate very well. But the pediatric eye doctors, they just do it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to sedate them or anything. They just know how to do it. And they don't have to cooperate and tell you what they're seeing on a chart
mm-hmm.
in order for them to tell you what their vision is like.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that would be a good thing to do. He does need to have routine dental care. I don't know if he started that yet.
We're doing that. His first appointment is the 17th of March.
Good. Right. Very good. Not really anything in the family history that's very helpful. His physical exam is very normal. Didn't say anything unusual about the way he was put together. His neurologic exam is normal. Muscle tone, reflexes, cranial nerves, all that stuff is working great. So, something on a finer wiring level than we can see. I think she already mentioned about sleep. That, you know, he can sleep in his own bed. He's just all right to go ahead and move in that direction. That would be a good thing to do. As far as medication is concerned, we're not necessarily recommending medication right at this moment. Your doctor is Dr. Messel. He's very capable of handling this situation. But let me just tell you kind of a philosophy about medication. When you sign up for a trial of medication for impulse control, it's not a lifelong commitment. You can stop it anytime you want to, and you should. If you don't like what it does to your kids, you should not give it, okay? The kinds of medications we use fall into two groups. One would be an alpha adrenergic agonist, like Tenex or Clonidine. I can give you some stuff to take home and read about these medicines if you want to. These are not controlled substances. They are not addictive. They're not. There are very few side effects on them. It's not the nine things that we ever use. And we use it in toddlers who have trouble controlling themselves. We just dial down their reactivity to situations a little bit so that they can have a little more time to think about what they're going to do before they do it. Before they yank on that hair, they can stop and remember, no, I'm not supposed to do that. Because what's happening is if he acts before he thinks, it just happens. He can't really help it. So that's what this medicine is for. The main side effect of those two medicines is drowsiness. It shouldn't last more than 2 or 3 days, and you should get used to that. And if you don't, you're not doing too much medicine, or you've got to back off somehow, or maybe you need to switch and try something different. But those are the kind of medicines that we typically start with in kids this age. Stimulant medications, things like Ritalin, Adderall, Dexedrine, those kind of things. Those are used after a kid is 5, generally speaking, and when they are in a full-day school program and they've really got to concentrate in order to complete work. In the preschool age, usually the structure of the school situation kind of takes care of that. There is somebody on them all the time. There is a lot of supervision, and they don't really have to do a lot of self-initiation of task initiation and completion. So that's why it's really a little bit different. We tend to have more side effects using the stimulants in the younger age group, so we try to put it off, you know, a little bit later. But usually after 5, they tolerate it very well and there aren't very many side effects. The first group of medicines that I mentioned really work better if you just do it the same every day. You just give them the same medicine every day. The stimulant medications, which we might use when he's a little bit older, if he goes on to show us that he's got ADHD, those medicines only work the day you give them. They're gone by the next morning. There's nothing left. So every day is a brand new day. You're starting all over again. It's not hanging around. And for that reason, some people prefer not to give it on weekends. They take kind of little vacations from the medication. There doesn't appear to be any benefit to doing that, really, except that there is a side effect to all of the stimulant medications that really affect your appetite. So you don't eat very well. Some parents really get worried about that, so they didn't really think they could really see what the medication for the younger age kids, it doesn't have any effect on their appetite. I've never really had any problem with that. So, that's kind of the difference. But anytime you use a medication for behavior, it's got to do exactly what you want it to do. And it's got to not do anything you don't want it to do. So you need to know what the side effects are. And if you see anything, even if it's not on that list, if you see something you don't like, then you should gotta raise your hand and say, hey, wait a minute here. Yeah, I don't like this. I don't get the dose of sex or responding in an unusual way or what. But don't let anybody do anything to your kid that you don't like, okay? That's just good common sense. Alright?
Okay.
And it won't hurt to stop it. If you don't like it, don't give it.
Mm-hmm.
So you should be perfectly safe to try it. What you don't want to happen is when he's 8 or 9 to try it and say, oh my gosh, if I'd only done this 3 years ago, we'd be so far ahead now.
Mm-hmm.
If we could just focus. You don't want that to happen. So I would encourage you, if he needs it, to try it sooner than later, get pushed off for him. You'd be hitting yourself in the head. You'd be doing that horsey sign on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's
really
all I have. She's a
great
kid. She's gorgeous and sweet and cute. I think she'll do very well.
Thanks. Can you tell me what you called the first medicine,
I'm
the Tenex and the
Clannadin? I'm going to
get something from
you back.
I'm going
to get something from you back. I'm going to
get
something from you back.
I don't know.
Yeah. Wait, I can.
For you to take home and read about those two different
Thanks.
Classes of medication.
And my question was, if it says here, why this one is given between 3 and 5 and this one starts at 5 and up.
Well, what I was saying was that the nervous system just isn't really
accommodated. Right,
the
okay.
Stimulants as easily. You have more side effects
mm-hmm.
in the younger age groups. Now, that's not to say that I haven't used Ritalin in a 3-year-old because I have, and
mm-hmm.
it can work great. But I'd be more likely to have some agitation and nervousness and anxiety
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
And very poor appetite.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, little 3-year-olds, you just kind of hate to do something like that.
Right.
So it's just a matter of their nervous system
mm-hmm.
development and being ready to handle something like that.
Okay.
Myelination, all that kind of stuff.
Okay. I'll try to be fairly brief, but Miles, I assessed it from sensory processing through your information you gave me primarily. I always mentioned that, but it's a little small piece of his life here and not a very typical picture here at the assessing situation. And then I evaluated motor skills. I was kind of used a criterion reference test, just a checklist sort of a type of test. And he was very tired and kind of, you know, done with the testing by the time I saw him. So, I'm not sure that this is a totally accurate picture, you know, worries either because he refused to do some things. And I took some of your report for some things like the block stacking, so a little bit of everything. The sensory-wise, I think you guys probably know, I'll just kind of try to summarize it. You can read the report, but I'm not going into every sensory kind of input. But he kind of has some sensory modulation difficulties, and because he kind of responds, kind of has trouble regulating, get overstimulated pretty easily. And there's some things that he really seeks out, some kind of input, and some input that he finds kind of aversive, some of the test stuff, and it can even be the same system, like the, you know, test he seeks out, some tests,
mm-hmm.
you know, like being held a lot, and like some of that test, but then he also finds some things aversive. And it looks like he's feeling kind of adaptively to some of it. I mean, you know, he can participate in art media as long as he washes his hands, or the food and stuff. Sometimes, though, that will change with kids. Like the clothing issues sometimes become more of an issue. You know, things change. One thing kind of falls off and something else. So if we can help his processing, he'll feel better about that. Help that change a little bit, then that could be helpful. And I looked at the school. I think they have some nice schools with motor skills and all stuff like that. And they don't. It didn't sound like particularly they were addressing like sensory things, or it may just not be in the IP. They may not need a goal for it. But I thought that he might benefit. And I think with the impulse control and the attention thing too, maybe those kids, even if they don't have sensory processing things, the sensory input can help us self-regulate. We, as adults, we do things like that all the time. We, you can't go to a conference or a course or something or just in concentrating just sit still. Mm-hmm. People move and people are sooner nails and we have caffeine. We have all kinds of things to do to keep us aroused.
Yeah, I don't know why that's not in the IEP. I think it's something that we talked about a lot of the meeting just to ensure that they...
You might think that they are because if they don't want to measure something, then they don't necessarily. Everything they do is not in the IP. So I think they are doing it. You have a good resource there with the IP working directly with them. So I'm not going to give you, I have a couple handouts because I thought it might benefit you, you might be able to use some of these strategies at home too. They can help with a lot of kids, like at bedtime, or, and you said he stays at the table, right? When you raise him, pretty well. So that's good. You need to go to sometimes doing some sensory things. If you have a lot of trouble with completing an activity because his arousal level is too high, you can do some calming things or some do some things throughout the day. And a sensory diet is what we call where you just plan some, you just have a schedule of time to do those. Some people need to do, you know, sometimes it's, you know, set times, like wake-up time, you know, or before you go to school, before transition. So sometimes, you know, for different kids, it needs to be other times. And, you know, you'll probably need some other resources than just this to look into that. There's a lot of information. The out-of-sync child is a book that has, I don't know if you've read that, talks about sensory processing disorders. And there's out-of-sync child has fun, which has, it's like it's kind of a sequel, have all the activities to do, your OT at school should be able to be a good resource. So I'll give you just this basic sensory diet, it's like what it would look like at school, and I haven't adapted this yet to kind of show what you might be able to do at home, but you have different sensory systems and the types of input, and it would need to be individualized for him. He likes things in his mouth. I mean, having things in your mouth can be very calming and orienting. Why are we all chew gum and do all that stuff. I don't know. Okay. All those things that can help you. So I think that could be a big part of, or an important piece for him, you know, that, that can help throughout the next couple of years. I think schools will buy into that or recognize that if they've seen it work, like if they do something, that they don't really do it if they don't feel they need to. In other words, he's doing fine with the routine and maintaining his attention and his arousal level is fine, they're probably not going to do anything to, I mean, you know, just anything. But if they feel like they need something to calm down, they do it. And I think they might have mentioned that they're doing something. So just really have to talk to them. And then the motor skills wise on this test, and he's kind of range, but probably his lowest functioning area was like 15 months, which was just progressing to health skills. And then he kind of went after 24 months. This particular test really kind of stopped at 24 months, but he wasn't really completing things like solidly up to there. I would have probably gone to the next one. But, like I said, he refused to do some things. He wasn't real super motivated to do all the things that I had. So, but it just shows that he could have about a year behind in some of his motor skills. I think that's why he's succeeding in his school. I think there's some things, like the imitative things that he, like he was doing with the pencil, he was doing the circular strokes. So he just had a struggle for us and some circular strokes that he wasn't doing straight little lines. And you said lines are hard. And who knows, I have some kids, I wouldn't necessarily, when he gets to the age appropriate level, I don't necessarily feel like some of the kids I've seen, they don't have to do those before they have to go on try cross. Or sometimes I use manipulatives. Sometimes kids seem like there's some wooden forms that go with the handwriting without tears writing program, or like pipe cleaners, or, you know, something like that, or drawing in the sand. I mean, you don't have to do it always with the marker and a pencil. So, and he wasn't, you know, real crazy about, you know, imitating kind of on with that fun, or at least with me that day. The blocks, things like that. So you can read through some of the skills that he did do and things. But, and so I think when I looked at the goals that they had on the IEP, I thought they looked really appropriate. I did, and I think it's good that he's receiving OT. You can kind of monitor that progress when they give you reports and see if you feel like, and depending on whether he gets services, like continued services through the summer ever, you know, if you ever felt like you, you know, he might be a candidate to do some more summer therapy, like here or some therapy.
He'll get continued therapy.
Okay, good.
Well, yeah.
Some kids don't and do, so, you know, I think that would be, but if you ever feel like, you know, and he's still so young now, just three, but like some kids, if he continues with some fine motor difficulties, like to get him ready for kindergarten, we really want to get him ready with the writing and stuff, and I don't know where he'll be in 2 years, but some kids at some point can benefit from some additional therapy. In the early childhood setting, I should be able to work on, I didn't see like a goal for any of the daily living skills, like helping him eat with utensils. They may just incorporate that into their daily routine. That's the nice thing about early childhood. But I did say they could consider, even if they don't do out of goal, that they consider some activities. And they may already be doing that. Like I said, the IQ doesn't work everything that they're doing. To work on that dressing, they can embed it into routine, like if you put on a paint smock for painting. I mean, I know they're not having to dress and undress at school usually. But they have probably dressing boards and things, so they can work on those, on that stuff. Shoes and socks, just, you know, you can make it an activity that you take them off to sit on several times. You know, they can kind of embed some of that dressing in some dressing.
Is it something that needs to be done at school, or is it something that we can do?
Well, no, it needs to be at home too. Okay. So, yeah, I just thought that, but it's nice that if they have to do it rather than, you know, that they work on, like, rather than just doing it for him at school. But
Right.
If they can give them a few opportunities. But no, and I did put in there some ideas too, that some kids need, like, to have a mirror to look in front of. It helps them figure out kind of where. You know, when they're putting this over their head and they kind of get lost on where the arms go for having it and working in front of the mirror can give them kind of visual cues. Really just breaking it down and giving them, like, I don't know, deceptively, but I can't remember, he'd be able to kind of follow some.
I
can't remember, but we're just like, sometimes it helps to really break things down, like, you know, grab it with two hands and pull it over your head, and then, you know, just really give him the verbal cues that he needs for the positioning and all that.
Along with visual cues.
Right.
So pairing those two together.
Yeah, I think with both of them, that just gives them. And it's almost like we just, everything is one whole thing. We have to remember, like when I teach someone shoe tying, which he's not ready for yet, developmentally, his age. But I mean, when I do that, it's like, I think of it as a whole thing. I have to go back and it's like, okay, first you cross on my, you know, you give them the real specific directions and with the visual, like she said, so that, they really know, and then you're repetitive, and then you can complete all the tasks and let him do the very last thing, which you're probably already doing some of that, like pushing your arm through, you know, but in the mirror can help. So I gave you some tips in there on that. Sensory diet. I was wondering, as I was thinking, I always forget something. I did recommend that you just do like some strong flavor foods if you want, since he still has some drooling, right, and he has, he likes the stronger flavors, it sounds like some of the saltier meats and some of that kind of stuff, and he still kind of likes to have mouths and toys, right, or put some things in his mouth. So I think he's speaking, he's seeking out some extra input in his mouth, and I don't think that would hurt at all if he was speaking language development. I mean, it just would give him some more information in his mouth. So I have some work that he's kind of there could be anything sort of, you know, just great health, which might be hard for some, but, you know, lots of seasoning should be
he
fine.
He eats the ginger when we get sushi.
Does he? Wow.
He loves sushi.
He likes
that's good.
Oh, yeah.
And he likes
how
the,
do I?
I do. And he likes the ginger, but it, you know, if ginger is hot, really hot.
You can get it sweet when it's in a small pot, yeah.
Right, but
hot,
it's hot, and he eats like a straight line and onions.
Well, and the beet pickles and all the barbecue sauce and everything.
And we have that. Well, we have had two talk tools, but I'm not going to get another one. They keep, do you know what the talk tool is? It's like a little vibrator thing that you can put in their mouth, and it's got like different attachments that go on top, and they're rubber, and they keep breaking. Well, they get wet, and I think from his mouth. We have electric toothbrush to do the mouth.
And I'll send you, I have a little handout that someone put together that has like some websites with all these oral medicines.
Yeah, I got those all.
And I put a couple ideas for some other activities, a lot of like mouth play things. I mean, strong stuff. I don't know if you like, sometimes I have kids just for snack, not for like, if they're starving, they're not going to be patient, but you know, they can suck yogurt and applesauce through straw. That's a really strong suck, and blowing things, and lots of just.
Which he doesn't like to do. Any of those things.
Well,
it's hard.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he, like, blows a little, like, pom-pom. You know, those little pom-poms.
Yeah.
He'll, like, blow that across the table, like, back and forth.
Sometimes that, what we call, like, an unsupported blow is harder for kids than if they have,
like,
something. Because then they can kind of bite on something. You can get one of those thick straws, not the kind, because a lot of kids will bite down on a collapsible straw, but the heavy-duty plastic straws are kind of like a...
Well, he likes to play the harmonica, but I think it's because he can suck.
Right.
He doesn't have to blow. Blowing is harder for him than, you know, sucking.
And there's a whole, and there's their websites, like there's a speech pathologist that has, like, a straw program, and I think a whistle, I don't know, there's a couple, like, set programs that... I don't always feel like it has to be like a set. But there are, like, whistles are really different. The size, the way it fits your mouth can make a big difference. Like, I have these little teeny ones that we give away for free upstairs, but most of the kids can't do them because the little part that goes in your mouth, you don't cover that hole. It's so tiny that they can't pucker that well and plan that well to get that in their mouth just the right way. But then there are a lot of big ones that, like, they kind of push the alligator out and bring it back in and stuck in and then pull out and things like that. So just kind of explore some
And he would love the party blowers, but he chooses the hard blowers. He likes those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Some just razzle like the little thing that they don't, because the parts unroll.
Right.
He can't do that thing that unrolls, can he?
Yeah, he can.
Really?
Yeah. Oh,
that's a very
fun
blow.
Yeah. Oh, he can blow. He just wouldn't do it very often.
Okay.
Or for very long.
He
might
obviously.
Be,
he would be good for, I have some kids that I try to get, like, stained blow, like, with bubbles and soap and water, but he would drink it, right?
And he
dumps
it.
He dumps it.
He would just
dump
it.
Well,
because he can just, like, blow bubbles.
And then he gets very upset because it's gone.
And he gets too close to it.
Yeah. I like the one that you had that pops up. Where did you get that one?
Yeah.
He ordered it. I think it's...
I have to have one because you don't get bubbles all over your hands.
Oh, you do.
Yeah, you do.
It's very full.
I find that to be the hardest one to work. It's supposed to be squeezed too hard. Sometimes you have to squeeze a little harder to get more juice up there.
Oh.
The whole thing can pop out.
Oh, no. Okay.
It does have its downfall.
There are some, though, that there are non-still ones.
Mm-hmm. We have like one that's shaped like a cow, and you press a button, and the bubbles come out, and it doesn't spill.
There's nothing that's not spilling out. I mean, it doesn't happen.
There is one actually. There is one with a it has a lid on it, and
we were doing. He'll believe me. Light and quick, he'll find a way, and that thing will be pop that thing off.
It's hard to get things on the
better
one. When you're talking, I think you have to twist it.
Yeah.
The bubble thing and has the dome lid.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
But if you knock it upside down, I mean, he's got that thing to leave.
The bubble wants to be hard for kids.
Yeah.
I think it's harder. I think it can still. It's like it's falling over, it's nothing shot.
Right,
but
exactly.
If you just sit there and hold it.
Well, that'd be tough. This is upside down.
Right.
If you try.
No, you just press it. Like, we use that, like, if he's, like.
For roars.
Like if he's, like, going down the slide or if he's jumping on the trampoline or something, just to have extra stimulation. I mean, you know, just so he doesn't get, just so he gets used to it. He got very upset when we were making Valentine's. I know, we're doing, we're working on it.
I even have a cool one upstairs where it's like handles you dip, you have all little nubby little things you dip in there, and you're really just putting up to your mouth, you have the pressure on your mouth, too, so you're really not... You're not going to get any of the bubbles because most of the kids, you know, end up sucking all the bubbles, because they put their mouth on the wand. So that one is one that, like, their little lips that you put, you know, they look like lips, and you put it up there and blow out, and the bubble goes in this other thing that sticks out, so it never really, I guess it's not really how it may be. You know, I've tried it myself, so. But they're kind of, there's an underlying thing with bubbles, if anything, dirty.
Yeah, oh yeah, you're going to, which is okay, it's fine.
It's fine. But I have to see the, um, particularly when you do it outside. That's, yeah. I can't wait till it gets warmer. Yeah. Yes. Miles is definitely, I think we're all in that. Can I ask you a quick question?
You said that some people don't even think that apraxia exists. What would it have been called before that? Or, like, what are those people, what would those people call?
Phonological.
Okay. I was just curious. Okay.
Which, I mean, I think it's, I mean, it's just different perspectives.
Well,
how you define something. I mean, there's nothing that's magic. It's a matter of semantics. And if it's really put that definition or another definition.
Right.
So is it safe for us to rule out? I know we've been kind of shoved into this term of autism spectrum.
Yeah.
Is that even applicable to him?
He doesn't fit for autism.
But, okay.
Period. He doesn't look like an autistic child. I mean, there was nothing about him that we felt looked autistic at all.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if he ever has times where he's not socially just running right out there, a lot of times when kids can't talk and they're realizing it's hard, they do tend to pull back a little bit.
Right.
And when he is impulsive.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. ADHD kids and impulsive kids have horrible social skills. They're about 30% behind in social skills from whatever their cognitive level is. Because they just are, I mean, it's not that they don't want to be social, they just can't get their act together to do it very well.
Right.
And,
pay attention to
all the social kids,
too.
Right, they don't pay attention, when I say when they're young, I mean, we see this all the time, we see ADHD kids all the time, people worry about their socialization, which is a good thing to worry about,
right,
because you need to work on those things. But it's because they're grabbing things before they, not very socially appropriate,
right.
At three, all those things are more what kids do at three.
Right.
And then if you add the language issue, mm-hmm. we certainly see language, especially kids with bad articulation problems, with difficulty forming words, that they become much more isolated because they recognize it's so frustrating,
mm-hmm.
nobody understands that.
Right.
But the fact that he knows that somebody doesn't understand him is a non-autistic behavior.
Right.
Okay? Because autistic kids, they talk, they think they understand. I mean, they talk in a whole other language and they think you understand them.
Right.
They're just completely not aware that you're not understanding them.
Right.
And only are they frustrated by the fact they're not getting what they want. But they're not, if they're even communicating with you, that is.
He's trying to use death. He's trying to come up with other ways to communicate. He had tons of death. Right. So that's good there, that he's like, well, this isn't working, so I'm going to find some way to get you to understand something. So, and the fact that he, I mean, a lot of times that the fact that he's assigned at this young age is very, very good and much more communicative than we usually see. The only diagnosis that you can never completely rule out
Is the older diagnosis, which is more the Asperger's diagnosis. But there's nothing about him right now that makes me think of that, not to mention the fact that actually he doesn't qualify for that because he has a language delay. So it's really, that's just not what he looks like.
Right.
I mean, he certainly certainly has deficits, but that it's just not those deficits. Which is good news,
mm-hmm.
which is really good news. I mean, I thought he was very social.
Yeah. Well, the first quasi-diagnosis that we got was that he had Angelman syndrome, and then they did all of the genetic testing and said that he did have, you know, the issue with the 15th chromosome, but it wasn't Angelman.
The developmental delay
syndrome, probably, and
yeah. Yes, and those little chromosome differences. Whenever there's a difference, we know that causes something, but we don't always know what it causes.
Mm-hmm.
And there's such a huge spectrum on every single, now we're learning. We used to think, like, if they had something, we were only looking at the most severe kids, so we thought everybody looked like that who had that anomaly.
Right.
But now what we're seeing is it's a much wider range with each thing. So it gets even more complicated to decide who to test, what to test for, you know,
that doctor said that, Torfelson or whatever his name was, that he had the Evans ankle folds and
right.
his nose and
he
his ears, you know, and that he said that those were all sort of related to, you know, issues on the 15th chromosome.
Right.
And so that he could have, you know, something.
Right.
But we didn't do.
Well, he doesn't have blonde hair, he doesn't have blue eyes, he doesn't
right.
do bird flap,
right.
and he loves water. I mean, there's things that go in, which is why I was trying to rule out the whole autism spectrum
right.
thing. Because when we're in a world right now where 1 in 150 kids are being born,
right.
and it's in this kind of, I just see everything that we've gotten up to this point right now is that classic, like, color shading in art class. There's all these circles, and they're like, well, you got this here, but you don't have this here.
Right.
You got this here, and it's like,
right.
we're just assailed with all of these sort of things. This is the first time we've heard, we've got sensory integration, long arm and 15 chromosomes, impulse control, possible, you know, so we got all of these things as parents. They were trying to figure out when we talked to schools and insurance companies. So, and that's why I wanted to rule that out.
Right.
We're trying to wrap our brain around
right.
what's going on.
I'm with you.
You know,
I'm with
so
you.
It's
I'm
just
with
kind
you.
Of.
And he went to the clinic with the other autism kids for a very long time,
yes,
and he did not have anything.
No.
Even,
Well, that's
relate,
what you said.
Yeah.
I mean, you said that.
But even Nancy Campman said she didn't think he had autism either.
But she said he should be here because there's things, there's several little things that fit within that water line of autism.
Let me put it this way. That kind of intervention is good for any child's developmental life.
So
it doesn't really matter. I mean, it's a little frustrating to me about the way the world is that we got to categorize these people. It's like, okay, let's can we just look at what the child needs and give it to them?
No, I
understand what you're saying with the insurance companies and all the people who are trying to categorize kids. And it helps them understand. But the truth is, with each child, we just have to look at what they need.
Sure.
And there was nothing wrong with the intervention he got. It was marvelous instructional control.
Sure.
And I'm sure part of that is because of all the work that's been done,
right.
Both by you and by that school.
Right.
So there's nothing wrong with it. It's just, and most developmentally delayed kids would benefit from that kind of programming.
I agree.
And
most of them will never get it because it costs $60,000 a year.
Yeah, exactly.
That's exactly.
Unfortunately.
Exactly.
And insurance, if you're wanting a little extra help, and insurance is cover. If you want it, I mean, sometimes we have some financial help here. So if you wanted to try to come here and see if, I don't know if the help we would provide would be enough. That insurance didn't cover for you all, but that's another option if you want to.
I don't think we're
going to
do it right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think. I think the big thing from this point on is to be in closer contact with school, make sure we know exactly what they're doing, and then we just, I mean, it's all about diligence. I mean, everything.
It really is.
Just the laws of repetition.
It really is. It really is.
So.
Did you get to finish? Because I think I interrupted you with a question, and I didn't know if you were finished.
There was one other thing I was wondering about, but I didn't. I'll add it to the.
Okay. Yeah, we do that.
We had therapy in the house for
12 hours a week, so. And we had to be there for that because it's, it was through First Step, so the parent is there. So.
Okay.
I could probably get an honorary degree.
As an
OT or a CT or a PhD.
That worked the way it should have. It actually trained you guys, and you actually were able to take that information and use it, which is not always true of all people who get those kinds of interventions. You actually understood that you needed to do something too. But a lot of parents don't seem to understand.
Right.
So you don't really use what all the services you have gotten. You haven't really used those services exactly the way they should have been used to help. Because it's obviously true that the people who live with the child the most are the ones that are going to, if they can help them practice in vivo, in the situation, they have the most chance for that to all come together and work successfully.
It's hard though, really hard for parents. I mean,
I
think
know it's hard.
We have amazing bosses who, Joe Sloss let him come to therapy twice a week, in the middle of the day. So he would do therapy, half the time, and I would do it half the time. But it's overwhelming.
It is overwhelming
for people.
But I will compliment you on all that you've done. Just
thank
you. Believe me, we see people who could do it who don't do it too. So okay.
Yeah.
So just give yourself some credit.
Okay. I'm not until he starts talking or something. Yes.
I think you need to appreciate how much worse he could look at this moment.
I can't even go there.
Yeah,
There's so much work that's been done.
If you hadn't done all that work, believe me, he would not look the way he does
and
now.
And it's too sad to think about.
And he I want you to look at it from a point of view of you've done so much, and you will continue, and he will continue to make progress.
Mm-hmm.
And he will hit little plateaus, but then he'll spur it ahead. I think so much of this little guy that lives around the corner from me that came in at about this age and was so horribly apraxic and wasn't saying anything, and somebody thought he was autistic too, and he wasn't, I get to see him, so I've seen the progress, and now he's just a chatterbox.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's something, he'll run up to me and he'll just be talking to Blue Streak to me, you know. And it's just so nice to see. So please have hope that that is going to happen. I think it will take longer for your little guy just because he's a little further back, but I think he's going to do it. I think he wants to do it. That's the other thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, we talk all the time. I think the first thing he's going to tell me is he's going to look at me and say, shut up. You've talked so much. I've listened to you for however long I'm done.
I did want to give you a couple. There were a couple of books I thought you might be interested in that are on more behavioral stuff. One is 1-2-3 Magic, which you may already know about. That's a really good one, upgoing, just to kind of how to handle those little challenges that are going to happen, that are normal little challenges in development. The other one is setting limits with your strong-willed child. And I think this little guy has a pretty strong little will. I think a real strong little person. And so that is just a nice book that kind of helps you think about those things in a different way. And I always give that one because one of our colleagues has a strong little guy, and she said that book really helped her, and so I think it's a nice one. So those are kind of for the future.
Mom is a pushover now that she doesn't have Nancy Champlin around to remind her about ABA.
Huh?
I think that ABA is as much for the parents as it is for the child. I mean, you can't just have one without the other.
Well, I mean, and that's the thing, as he kind of blossoms into his independence in this new environment, I'm crossing more and more bridges with him. He's going to have to get over things.
Exactly.
I mean, he's
going to
go.
That would be my message: is treat him confidently, and he will be more confident.
Well, yeah, and
if you treat him like, because in some ways, you know, when you fold to be upset or whatever, to be frustrated because you can't do it or whatever, it really tells him he's not confident.
Right.
And so if you think about that in terms of it helps, because it's like, you're confident. I believe in you.
Right.
So I believe that you can get through this process and be okay.
Yeah.
And that you will be able to put that sock on or do whatever that thing is that you need to do. And it's not that I'm not going to help you, but it's that I'm going to help you in much more small ways.
Right.
And one of the ways I'm going to help you is let you struggle through it a little bit. Because we all know that struggling does help us learn.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, the upshot of his impulsive nature is that you can redirect him easy.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, cat's in the room. Hey, let's go say hi to the cat. So he's in, he'll just get into it.
Yeah.
And that way he'll stop thinking about what he's doing.
And that teaches him to kind of relax and learn. But the thing is, every time he accomplishes something, he gets
it. Oh, yeah, sure.
And he does recognize those things. And so that's the thing. That's the thing to always keep as the goal.
Oh, yeah.
Is that when I'm more confident, and certainly, you know, you're talking about his self-soothing. He has to learn to self-soothe. There's no reason why he shouldn't be able to self-soothe.
Right.
He just doesn't like it. I mean, he might rather have somebody else do it for him. But, you know, special needs kids do run that terrible risk of being so prompt dependent and so they're so used to other people doing things for them that and that's a hard thing to break. So the sooner you kind of work on that, the better. And that's not to say he doesn't need help with things and that you shouldn't break things down and give him assistance, but you know, it's that fine line.
Oh, yeah.
And always kind of reevaluating, well, what's the next step?
Sure.
Because what I find is that often people come in at 5 and they'll think, well, you know, I didn't even think about letting them do that. I've been doing it so long, I never thought about the fact that he's telling me to do that for himself now.
Right.
So it's that kind of thing that we always have to kind of, and that's why two parents are very helpful, because sometimes one will be doing it and one isn't, and so you can say, well, you know, he did that for me. Oh, he can do that? Oh, well.
Sure.
And also at school versus home, you know. Well, he does it at school. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Or he does it at home. Oh, really? You know?
Sure.
I wanted to make sure, were these our copies, the case of the IEP? And
these
right
copies of the one.
Did I make those copies? Do you have your original IEP?
Yeah, we have everything. We have it in that book.
Oh, yeah, you do. You did.
We have it in that book.
You did.
I did.
Yeah. We have something back to you.
Yeah, I mean, we have everything.
We just didn't want to be taking your copy.
That is my original. Yeah, unless somebody made a colored copy.
Yeah, we like that, too.
Yeah. I love Belcher.
Well, the Belcher, it's just that Belcher was indelibly printed in my brain already.
Yeah.
I see everything in
Belcher's
terms.
Yeah.
Did he have a disintegration disorder, sensory integration,
anything? Not disintegration.
Did you get him?
Yeah.
And it was that he has sensory integration disorder?
I feel like it does.
Okay.
Is it, we call it,
oh, what is
changed,
it?
Well, sensory
okay.
processing disorder, it's changed so much how they coin that, the terms
okay.
and stuff. And they used to make it sensory integration, like discrimination part of it. I mean, they think it might be a whole separate thing under that whole umbrella. The modulation might be separate. You can have both. It's just very... It's not always easy to identify
that it's a point. I know this is hard, but what you have to understand is that these are all evolving things, and it makes it very difficult for us when parents want specifics, because we, from week to week, they keep changing
yes.
what the criteria is for different things, how people, and different people like the apraxia thing. Some people say it's this kind of thing, some people say it's that kind of thing.
Depending on what training you got as to whether or not
yeah.
you did the
well, I don't have to care.
Not defining the same thing.
I don't care about the semantics. I just want to be able to
right.
know roughly what the, you know, what the ideas
are. They have language issues.
I hope they change that, because that's a horrible thing.
What?
Impulse control disorder. That's just a terrible... The whole sound of that is awful.
Oh, see, I think that somebody
that
knows
what it is.
I know.
That sounds like that, a very minor thing.
It does.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just don't like the way it sounds. It's like, so you're bringing your child who has impulse control disorder order over to play
and
with my kids.
Oh my God!
I know. I know.
I'm starting to feel like I want to smoke or do something wrong or bad or impulsive because they keep using that word. Okay, very suggestible.
I know, I am suggestible.
Okay.
I'm not
going to
do it.
But Dad described him perfectly in the intake. So I would say,
right.
you described impulsive issues in the intake. I can't remember exactly what you said, but I thought, this is, when I saw him, I thought, that was exactly what Dad described.
Yeah.
All right, good deal. Okay, right. So, the report. Who has the latest copy?
Mine's printed on.
Oh, okay, you didn't. I thought it said one report.
Is it going to be all one? Everybody?
Yes, everybody will be. That's what I was trying to get you on with everybody. Then. Mine didn't have her in it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Lots of smiles.
you.